Tonight on All About Android, we've got Juan Bagnell in for Jason Howell to talk the new Pixel 5, Sony's new Android phones, and the latest Tick Watch. We're also going to talk about Carl Pei's exit from OnePlus, the new Google TV app, and why Apple's saying bye-bye to the EarPods. All this and so much more up next on All About Android.
All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Manscaped. Get the Manscaped Performance Package. It's the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/twit. And by LastPass. LastPass can help you manage identities and promote good security behaviors while your employees are remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is a challenge, especially with everything else you have to consider today. But there's one place where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/android. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hello and welcome to All About Android. This is episode number 494. Wow, I was 200 off. We are recording on October 13th, 2020. We are your latest source for the news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Florence Lyon.
And I'm Ron Richards. And we are Jason Howell-less this week. Jason is out on vacation.
As you can tell.
Me and Flo are driving the bus over bumpy roads, but we couldn't be more delighted to have Juan Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, joining us this week. Juan, good to see you, sir. It's been a few months. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, good to see you guys, too. But I have to put it out there, like, what's going on? It always seems like I catch the show, and it seems most frequently that I catch the show when Jason isn't here. And
well,
I know it's not like a personal hygiene thing.
I was hoping it wouldn't come up, but Jason's a little intimidated by you. So we find it's better to wait till he's off so that you can come on. Because, you know, Jason considers himself an audio guy. You're an audio guy.
Like magnets. Yeah. How do they work?
Which is why he goes to the woods when you're on, because he can't even be within, you know, cellular service. So
no, Jason loves you, Juan. In fact, you were his. He was the one who was like, "What about Juan?" I was like, "Yes, yeah. Juan." So yes. Yeah, it was all Jason. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm really stoked to be back, guys, and you know, especially without all the craziness that's kind of going on in the world right now. Happy to see some familiar faces, and especially on the day that we're talking today, really happy to focus on some Android stuff.
Oh, yes.
That's a little bit of a mm-hmm. theme this week is that the company across the street dominated the news today and this week. So we'll touch on that a bit, but we're also going to take advantage of the slow news week to spend some time with some cool hardware that you've got for us, Juan. Yeah. So we're pretty excited for that, right?
Yeah. Right. Looking forward to it.
All right. So with that, why don't we dive in and get right into what little news there actually is. Burke,
let's take it away.
Unlike Carl Pei, I will never leave this venture. Here's Android news.
That's really comforting.
Wow. I like that transition. That was pretty good towards the end. All right. Well, so this was a requested news story for us to cover by Wesley on Twitter. Wrote in and said, please tell me you're going to cover the fact that after 7 years, OnePlus co-founder Carl Pei is leaving the company, presumably to start a new venture. OnePlus hasn't confirmed this move yet, but after internal documents were posted on Reddit that showed Pei absent from their leadership structure, once those documents emerged, sources close to the matter said that he had left the company and is starting his own venture. So he co-founded OnePlus 7 years ago, and I guess we're gonna have to now wait and see A, for this to become official, and B, to see what he's gonna do next. Juan, how much of an impact do you think Carl Pei had on OnePlus? Mm-hmm. You know, like, really, how much will this actually change things versus, you know, not changing things?
You know, it's one of the things that I think is kind of interesting is the cynical response that we've seen in some of the Android circles. Like, oh, well, now it's just always been evident that OnePlus and Oppo and BBK, they were all the same company, and that this was just a cynical, you know, strategy for marketing. And I've had several conversations with Carl Payne throughout these various events that we would hold and get to go and travel to in years past. And I think that there was something that was really unique about what it was he was trying to accomplish, even if a good chunk of that was marketing. We didn't have at the time, OnePlus was really building up its fan base. We didn't have that Android enthusiast marketing plug, right? You know, like it felt kind of nice as the gadget geeks to have a company really focusing their message on this type of community and this niche population. So when we see that the recent transitions that OnePlus has made, I think we've already seen the direction that the company is starting to evolve, the direction they're trying to pivot and go more mass market, and that the little glimmers that we get of the Nord brand being handled almost like it's its own separate entity within OnePlus, which is a part of the overall BBK or Oppo umbrella. I think it's pretty clear to see that that's the direction that the OnePlus label is already heading. So it kind of makes sense that Carl Pei would be looking at other opportunities in other places to go and do something fresh.
I was looking at the Nord as like, oh, I wonder if that was the breaking point, right?
Or maybe not necessarily the breaking point. I mean, no, I agree with you, like especially in terms of timing. But more, I think the clearer indication of how these companies are now we're collaborating, working more closely together, and now it's more regional. You know, there's going to be an Oppo label in some regions, a OnePlus label in other regions, and then Nord is going to be something of a disrupting brand like OnePlus used to be in some regions. And I feel like with that kind of groundwork established, someone like Carl Pei probably does want to go off and try and tackle some other challenges.
Do you think he decided to go off on his own, or do you think that he's just kind of forced into finding a new venture?
Whether or not there's in any kind of internal corporate strife, I mean, it's just the realities of working on an enthusiast project.
Yes.
If it becomes successful, it's going to pivot and go mainstream. If it's not successful, it's going to slowly vanish and no one will ever hear of it again. So if you're that type of entrepreneurial spirit where you're trying to do something disruptive, you have to know that eventually your baby is going to grow up and get taken away from you. Like that's just always going to be the path that kind of creativity is going to walk. So I hope he had some sight or some expectation of, man, if I'm really successful with this OnePlus thing and it blows up, eventually it's going to be a higher profile or a marquee label or a bigger deal. And it's not going to be this little intimate project within, you know, like the smaller confines of the enthusiast space. What I'm hoping is now that it's kind of been passed off, you know, to more of an Oppo BBK leadership, you know, brand label within that umbrella, that we see people like Carl Pei go and try and do something else disruptive in another sector of the tech, consumer tech industry.
Well, so that's my other question, which is what, you know, do you think he moves on to another like mobile company and does it again, or does he expand, you know, and this is all speculation. Who knows what the dude's interested in? But I mean, but like, is this like an, you know, I hate to cite the name, but is it like an Andy Rubin situation where, you know, spins up a new OnePlus and takes a new approach at phones?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of hope so. I think there's this year showed us that there is a lot of interest in disrupting the normal smartphone use scenario, glass on glass slabs at the high end. That means, you know, radical designs and twisting screens and folding screens and modular accessories. And at the lower end, it's, you know, price performance in a very aggressive conversation as we try to roll out 5G. So especially considering his background, you know, where he came from before starting up this OnePlus experiment, I think he would be very valuable to a smaller company looking to try and shake up the current the current market for smartphones and services.
This is a tough one because I'm trying to think about how OnePlus is going to get to the level of the foldable phones, of kind of like, you know, of right. setting like a certain trend, because I think what they've done really well is appeal to the enthusiast who wants a really high-powered phone, or maybe, you know, the enthusiast who wants to buy a phone for their family that sorts of fits in their idea of what a big phone is. But I wonder if OnePlus is going to be able to continue this without Carl Pei at the helm. I really do. I wonder if he wasn't exit too soon, is sort of what I'm thinking.
It's been 7 years, Flo. I mean, it's been a while. I feel like he kind of set the legacy of what OnePlus could be. And to Juan's point, when an organization grows to a certain size, does it then become bigger than just one person? I mean, really, the only person in this space that we've seen have a dominant direction in the direction of a smartphone line has been Steve Jobs. And he was a once in a lifetime kind of person. Is Carl Pei a Steve Jobs type? I don't know. I mean, Juan, you better
know about that. Yeah. Well, no offense. It's just Steve Jobs is.
Yeah. That's a conversation for another podcast on this podcasting network, I'm sure. It's the thing I always appreciated about Carl Pei is that he was very candid. I remember an event shortly after the OnePlus 6 launch, and we're poking through the phone, drinks in hand. It's at the Swank nightclub, and he's still going off on we got some work to do on the camera, and we really want to try and polish this up. And he was basically laying out for us what the OnePlus 6T was going to be. I mean, it was very unreserved. It was very candid and very forthright. And those kinds of conversations are invaluable in the tech space when you're looking at people that have some vision.
Who's going to continue it for OnePlus? Because I'm thinking about that too. When I was more, out on the floor covering these things, especially with OnePlus, Carl Pei was always there. He was always talking about the product. He was usually the one giving the presentation. I really do wonder what precedent is that going to set going forward? I know it's been 7 years, and maybe I don't understand, company leadership as much as maybe I haven't studied it so much, but to me, it just still doesn't seem like a long enough time. I don't know. I'm very curious. This year,
this year's changing
a lot about the phone business.
Yeah, it is. But if you think about how OnePlus, it went from the OnePlus One to now we're on the 8, right? We've gotten 8 generations of the phone. We've watched it, emerge from a disruptor, low price phone all the way up to flagship. And Flo, you made a great point, which is that, how does OnePlus get to the level of Samsung and LG and doing experimental phones and coming up with new form factors and things like that? But, we're speculating, but maybe Pei wasn't interested in that. Maybe he was really into the low price disruptor kind of aspect of it. And that's why I didn't like the direction the company was going. And at some point, one person can't redirect the whole direction of hundreds of people working around a corporate vision. Who knows? I mean, I'm curious to see what he does next. He definitely is someone who changed the landscape. When OnePlus came on board, I think it took us several weeks or months to wrap our head around what is this exactly and what are they doing. It wasn't until Gina Trapani switched to the OnePlus. The OnePlus One. And that's when I took it seriously. Like someone who I trusted was like, "Hey, I'm going to give it a shot." And I spent a year and a half with OnePlus phones, and I loved them. I thought they were great. I didn't mention at the top of the show, not to go away from OnePlus, but I did get my Pixel 4a. A couple of days ago. So I've been, and speaking of OnePlus, comparing it to my OnePlus 7 Pro, it is tiny. I feel like Jason holding this phone in my hand, because it's like I just feel like I'm enormous and the phone is tiny, but I'm liking it so far. So more when next week we'll talk more. I'll do a little kind of hands-on with the Pixel 4a. I know I'm the last person in the world to get it, but still, it's my first very own out of the gate Pixel, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm very positive on 4a. It's really helping to shake up that conversation, and like we've been talking internationally with phones like the Nord, of just how pleasant an experience it is at sub $400 prices. And it's really reinforcing, especially in light of the recent economic news around the world, how refreshing it is to have an option there where you don't feel like you're getting punished for software updates. You don't feel like you're getting punished for camera performance. It has a headphone jack, which I know is your primary priority and having good audio, Ron, is having a cabled connection for the best signal stability and the highest fidelity at all times. Listen, I know that's so critical to you.
Listen, these Sony earbuds that I use that I paid $899 for, really, I want to make sure that the audio quality is the best it can be. Yeah.
I mean, I'm on my in-ear monitors, but with the phone I've been spending time with, it's almost like we were role reversal because I'm on Pixel Buds now, where I'm doing the wireless thing while you're using a phone with a headphone jack. What kind of madcap, zany, topsy-turvy world are we living in these days?
Everything's turning around.
I feel like this is a really good segue into our next little news item, actually. Speaking of headphone jacks and headphones and things of the sort, I don't know if you guys heard, but Apple had like a really big event today. I personally wasn't around for the event. So I don't know. Apparently they announced a new phone, the iPhone 12. Mm-hmm. There are a couple other shows here on the Twit Network where you can catch up on that news. But here we're going to actually talk about something that I'm kind of hoping will set Juan off a little bit. So let's see if I can bait him. So Apple says that the iPhone 12, it nixes the EarPods and the power adapter. Now, the company is doing this to be a little more environmentally friendly, which we could use any of right now because, you know, climate change. Now, iPhone users will have to buy EarPods and the USB power adapter separately, I think, because here the idea is that if you're already a big Apple fan, you're already in this ecosystem, you probably have something to listen to your phone with, you probably have something to charge your phone. But, you know, I'm thinking as an Android adjacent kind of news item, how do we kind of feel about this? You know, Apple does have the power to set a precedent in this industry. And so it makes me think, how is this going to set a precedent for us Android-using folk and the dozens of manufacturers out there that do include these accessories? Is this really an environmentally friendly move, or is this just Apple being like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, our fan base knows everything already, so if you're not in the game, too bad. And Juan, I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you picked a good one to set me off. I was kind of cranky pants all over Twitter during the actual keynote, during the actual, I don't know. See, the thing is, the long term on this, I'm actually very positive. I want consumers to take some ownership over things like accessories, to just look at their own behavior. I think we can all agree that when we talk about environmental impact and waste and how we clean up the environment and the air, we really have to look at the structures of like mega corporations. But that doesn't mean that we can't contribute in some small ways down at the ground floor, at the individual user floor too. And especially for some of the wonderful products that are out there, where you know you can get great chargers and you can kind of take some ownership over your products and use them better and use them with, you know, just a little bit more of an environmentally conscious way. I am positive. I you know, put less junk in the box that I'm probably not going to like, and it empowers me, and it, you know, if I'm informed properly, I make smarter purchasing decisions that last beyond the product, the phone or the gadget that I'm trying to support. That's what I hope to have more of a conversation with. The reason why I get a little cranky when Apple makes a move like this is because I feel some of these moves tend to be more economically cynical than the feel-good marketing would indicate. Mm. I think the iPhone 12 is kind of a perfect example of this. We're going to put out this claim, but we're not really going to back the claim up. And then we're gonna shift our marketing and our device sales strategy to maximize profits in a way that probably doesn't verify the claim. So the iPhone is still the only gadget that uses a Lightning connector. You have all of these cables, all of these chargers, all of these single feature dongles, because Lightning is still the USB 2 standard. So like where I can grab a laptop dock on a USB-C cable and plug this into a phone, you can't do all of these things on an iPhone because of the Lightning connector. You have to have $30 individual dongles for memory card readers and for USB camera connectors and for headphone dongles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Apple says they're doing this for the environment and they can reduce some of the packaging waste of the phone itself, but they're not changing their strategy to be more like iPad, where all of those accessories would then get double duty, where you could plug that dongle into an iPad, into a MacBook, into an iPhone. The iPhone can't do that by design of this Lightning connector, which is not a standard. It's unique to the iPhone and creates waste just based on the iPhone. And then all of those accessories are going to come in additional packaging. So you saved packaging waste on the box for the phone, but then you still need to go out and buy a charger. You probably want to get an extra cable. And then they piggyback this by saying, well, you've got all these chargers out there. Well, they gave you a USB-C Lightning cable in the box. And we know most of the chargers out there use USB-A. So again, their behavior to me doesn't quite gel with this feel good marketing of we're so environmentally friendly, but now you're going to want to get a MagSafe wireless adapting charger, and you're going to need to get a different charge brick. You're probably going to need to get additional accessories to kind of flesh out what used
and
to be
Apple
in the
Care
box.
On top of it, don't forget you could pay for Apple Care for your accessories.
And this is also the company that makes AirPods. And whether you like or dislike AirPods, I'd highly recommend checking out the folks over at iFixit, because if you're concerned about the environment, you don't want earbuds that are completely unserviceable, are designed in a way that not only can you not fix them or replace batteries, they don't seem to be recyclable in any way
Q-tips.
For you to extract.
They're Q-tips you throw in the trash.
And even from Apple, because Apple likes to make those. Apple likes to showcase that we can take gadgets apart and get these materials back and recycle these materials. AirPods don't seem to be recyclable to any great degree. So, you know, we can always count on, as soon as Apple makes some kind of market shift like this, Samsung is going to make fun of them for 6 months and then copy them because it's just more profitable.
It's true.
To do that.
Although I will over the years, I got this like little geometric bowl, right? And it's become my earbud bowl. So whenever before COVID times, people would come over and, you know, would you like an earbud for your ride home? Because I've been collecting them from all these phones.
Because it is. I mean, I don't use any of those things, but I have given away a lot of included earbuds in different cases. But it's frustrating because I feel like this is something that consumers should be on top of, that we should take ownership of our products and make smarter accessory purchasing decisions. But I just feel like when Apple does this, it's going to be a ripple effect through Samsung. And then LG is going to copy Samsung because we know LG copies Samsung.
But they're all
going
to continue to use, you know, metals that are overmined in different like countries. They're all going to continue like, you know, the amount of pollution from all this stuff
we were talking about Steve Jobs earlier. It all goes back to the reality distortion field that he established.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it is. I mean, everyone loved the iPhone. No one loved the working conditions at Foxconn. You know,
it is an opportunity to look at some of our purchasing decisions where
I agree. Yeah.
You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Samsung, but a lot of Samsung earbuds are at least somewhat serviceable. Like, you know, again, I love watching teardowns and I love watching people really try to repair gadgets. And you know, if we can do a better job of showcasing or highlighting that, if we care about the environment, then it's on us to say, you know, hey, maybe not AirPods, but if you look at these Galaxy Buds, you might actually be able to replace batteries on them. So instead of burning them out over a year and a half and having to buy new $200 earbuds, you might be able to get the batteries replaced. And that should give us, you know, the evidence for making a smarter, longer term purchasing decision, which is better on our wallet and better for the environment. And that's a win-win. Yeah. So it's unfortunate because like that means we also have to kind of counteract Apple's marketing machine, which I can't. Like, I can't.
I mean, not even Apple's Google's megaphone. Been able to counteract that, right? And Google's got, I would argue, about the same, you know, amount of prowess there. So, I don't know.
But for Apple bringing this conversation up, though, it does help us spread the word on what we think might be, you know, sort of a more reasonable or more responsible, you know, kind of tech ownership. So, I mean, I at least need to credit them for that. But I very rarely find that when Apple pulls the plug on a feature or removes a part of a device, that it's very rarely for the consumer benefit. It's most often.
It's rarely altruistic, right?
Yeah, it's a very calculated move to make sure that they can maximize the value added purchases of accessories at the time that someone picks up a phone. And I don't have the warm feels for their marketing message on this one. While I'm very concerned about the future of e-waste, I don't see where this move is really going to make it better. And I think in many ways it will probably make the short term change a lot worse for people in the short term.
Well, that's fair and valid.
I knew that's it would set him off, y'all. I told
good
you.
Good job.
It was a good one. I mean, as soon as I like saw like, oh, we're going to make the packaging less. And you're like, no, because now I have to buy a charger and probably another cable. And
it's
and
more
this
packaging.
And that.
It's more packaging.
It's way more packaging.
Yeah.
What I would love, you know, allow us on this little Android podcast, Apple, to make a request. If this really is about reducing waste and helping the environment, make it an initiative in your Apple stores where the products and accessories and dongles that you sell just are delivered directly, where there isn't a fancy, cute little box for this dongle that I need for a USB or a memory card reader or something. And I go in and I talk to someone in one of your, you know, Apple polo shirts, and they swipe a credit card on an iPhone, and then they just hand me the product. And
recyclable static bag or something like that's disposable. Totally agree.
Give me a low impact, environmentally friendly, near tissue paper quality bag, and let me just walk out with that product. And then I'll start to take some of this commentary on protecting the environment a little bit more seriously.
All right, fair. Big words for Juan.
Apple also will hear them, I'm sure.
Also probably another good segue, because if you want to avoid getting an iPhone 12 or getting AirPods or anything like that, today and tomorrow you might want to head over to Amazon.com. This is their annual Prime Day, which is actually 2 days. And the fine folks at Android Police, as well as every other blog out there, have compiled a bunch of lists of all the things that you can get from Amazon from a low, low price. And there's a lot of stuff for us Android folks, including wireless earbuds, headphones, and things like that, as well as phones. You can get a ton of the Samsung phones. You can get the Pixel 4, Pixel 4 XL. You know, you get the Pixel 4 XL for $350 off. That's quite the discount on that. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to or not, that's another question. But still. tablets are on there, Chromebooks, Wi-Fi mesh network, you know, like home, you know, smart devices, noise canceling headphones, all the stuff that you want to get. You can get an Amazon Echo.
White strips, by the way.
Yeah. Bluetooth headphones. Speakers.
I feel
TVs.
Attacked.
I heard Crest White Strips are a really good deal. $12 instead of the usual whatever they are, 60% off. I don't know.
But anyway, if you're in the market for something, you might want to check it out, save some money while you're at it with their insane 2-day Prime Day. So there it is. Always a fun time to see what in the Android world is on sale. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we're going to pause, and we're all going to be adults as we thank our first sponsor, because this episode of All About Android is brought to you by Manscaped. And hey, mirror, mirror on the wall, what's the best brand for my balls? Manscaped, of course. But hang on now. We're all getting older. You got some nose hairs up there. Good thing our partners at Manscaped are here to ensure you're taking care of your manhood and your nose hairs with their new performance package. And listen, I'm no spring chicken. I'm in my 40s. I will say it was probably about, I want to say 10, 15 years ago that for Christmas, my dear older sister got me a nose hair trimmer, and I didn't even think about it. And she just kind of nodded, and I was like, oh, right, okay, I'm getting older. It's time to reel those things back in. And we all remember being in high school and making fun of that science teacher who had hair coming out of their ears or things like that. Don't be that person. All right. There are modern technology can help you to keep your grooming top notch. And luckily, Manscaped is here to help us with that. Manscaped's Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Included in this new package is the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, which is waterproof and uses a 9,000 RPM motored 360-degree rotary dual blade system. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. Look, fellas, 79% of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff. So why not use the best tools for the job? This bundle includes the Lawn Mower 3.0 trimmer, the best trimmer on the market for your balls, butt, and body. And let's not forget their famous liquid formulations, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner to maximize your ball hygiene routine, because that's important. And you can get the Performance Package now to receive their two free gifts, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Also, you'll receive a replaceable blade every 3 months to keep your weed whacking and lawn mowing time clean and enjoyable. The Performance Package is the best value that Manscaped has to offer. Thank you, Manscaped, for making our holes look sexy. So you can get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/twit. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/twit. Manscaped.com/twit. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds and get all cleaned up for the world when you're stuck at home. Thank you, Manscaped, for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And that is a great time to go right into hardware.
Wow, 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 wow. We've actually got a lot of hardware that we're going to get through today. But first, we're going to start with a nice little show and tell of the Pixel 5, which Juan has in hand to show to us.
Yay! Okay, hold on.
Show us your new toy.
This is the Pixel 5. It's really pretty.
Okay, so wait, that's without a case. It's just...
This is without a case.
That's a... That blue, you got the bluish-ishy color.
It's, you know, I keep wanting to say it's like kind of like a tea colored or a nice, it's not quite like a turquoise, but it really is nice. I make fun of a lot of reviewers. It's like, oh, it feels really nice in the hand. Like that's some kind of really insightful gadget review commentary, but
it's called hand feel. It's called hand feel, Juan. What's the hand feel?
But it's, you know, like, yeah, I think we've been a ways from phones that, like, you know, oh no, it's like sharp edges and it hurts my evolved primate grip. Like, I feel like we've kind of gotten over that, but it's been really refreshing playing with a phone that's not a glass on glass or a shiny plastic trying to look like glass kind of phone. It kind of takes you back where we used to have more material competition for what our devices were made out of. But yeah, it's a cute little phone. And I got to say, I'm still under kind of an odd embargo where the Team Pixel crew, the hashtag gift from Google people, we can't really talk about like the deep dive performance-y stuff. Like I can show you the home screen and I can like kind of talk about the build and show you the phone and how much I love having rear fingerprint sensor again.
Like, but seen this beyond some press renders, and so I just want to see it.
let me see if I can give you guys a better angle on this. If you'll pardon my absolutely terribly messy desk, I'm not sure if this will work super well. My lights.
No, we do this every week on the show now because I just switched input. Jason has a fancy mixer now, which I really should maybe think about doing that. But.
And we want to apologize to our audio listeners for talking about what the video shot looks like.
Yes, we apologize, audio listeners. Right now, we're switching Juan's video. He's trying to get it set up so that we can... Oh, all right, there we go.
Hey, jeez, look at that. It actually really kind of works. So, So this is the Pixel 5, and it's nearly the same dimensions, Ron, as your Pixel 4a. I don't know
Juan
where my
is
Pixel
handling it right now is. In front of his desk. He's showing us the back. It's got this really nice blue. The G on the back is, you know, towards the bottom, kind of where we're used to seeing that on the Pixel devices. What color is that, Juan?
I forget what they call it. You know, Google always has those cute color names.
Well,
like,
what is the color of the G? Is that like the same blue?
Oh, no.
Is it a black?
No. It's a sort of a silver reflective. I'm just trying to catch it in the light of my studio lights here. But, you know, it's taking a lot of what I like about Pixel 4a. And I mean, until this iPhone 12 announcement, I feel like this is probably one of the smaller 5G enabled phones that people can shop. I know. From your commentary or people that have been, you know, kind of, you know, responding to your show, I feel like we've gotten all of these monster, huge, big, chunky chunk phones for 5G to handle the extra battery draw, for all the extra antennas. And it's kind of, again, there are just so many things about this where it's refreshing to have another option, a little bit more competition, in a way that, yeah, you kind of want to have at least another option that you can recommend to people when they're out shopping a phone. I know my dad.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought, listen, sometimes I'm bad with my transitions. I was just going to bring up the stovetop camera on the back and say that's still, you know.
So
you want to remind us real quick what hardware is there in that little camera section?
Of course. So we've got a 12 megapixel main wide shooter, and then another 12 megapixel ultra wide. So instead of going with the telephoto like the Pixel 4 had, they're going ultra wide. I've been generally fine. My preferred camera is having the ultra wide. I know we've got all these like super fancy space zooms and stuff, but
I don't need it.
I don't know. Yeah, for
reach, get a telescope. If I want to look at Saturn, I'll get a telescope. Okay, it's fine.
But don't you find, like, you know, your image integrity falls apart pretty quickly, and especially in sort of mixed lighting or lower lighting conditions, it just seems to kind of be better cropping from the main sensor anyway. One of the things that I'll be excited to show, which I can't really show right now, but in the coming days when this embargo lifts, this is a 765, a Snapdragon 765, and this is one of the only phones that I know of with the 765 that can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second. So it definitely seems like over last year, where the main focus was still photography and using a tripod for astrophotography, that Google is kind of circling back to some of the criticisms people had about improving the video quality on Pixels. And I think from the Pixel 4a to here, it's definitely a step up. Like, I've been shooting vlogs on the Pixel 4a, and the 30 frame per second 4K looks phenomenal. Dang. So I'm really excited to be playing with the Pixel 5 for something similar. But more than anything else, it's just kind of nice to have an option here where we're, you know, I know there's going to be an Android commentary where, because a Galaxy S20 FE exists, no one should buy anything else. But I want options. I want a little roadster phone. I want a big, heavy diesel truck phone. I want, you know, different solutions for different consumers. And I still feel like Google is making one of the best plays for software services and communicator devices. And if you're wanting that streamlined approach, you're not looking to replace a laptop with your phone, then I need a good option to recommend for that kind of consumer.
Well, I want to move on to another couple of little options. So thank you, Juan, for bringing the Pixel 5 to show and tell. I finally get to see one in person-ish.
It's pretty.
Yeah, well, maybe someday I'll see it in person for real. But until then, I really want to talk a little bit about some of the Sony phones that you recently reviewed, because I saw you're one of the few people that actually covered these phones kind of in a way that I knew that they were being covered, to be honest with you. We're talking about the Sony Xperia 5 II and the Sony Xperia 1 II. We're going to do a little more show and tell. Juan is still has his camera set up so that we can kind of look at them. But Juan, I would love for you to just kind of walk us through these two phones, just some of the highlights of them that you found while you were reviewing them, because we get a lot of questions about Sony phones, but we don't always have a lot of things to say about it, either because the phones aren't really available in the US mm-hmm. or it's just something gets announced and then it kind of falls and, you know, by the wayside. So I don't know. You want to talk a little bit about your experience with these two phones?
Absolutely. What we can unfortunately, I just had to send the Xperia 5 to
That's okay.
back. So this is the Xperia 1 Mark II. This is one of my favorite phones.
That's how you say it. I totally butchers that. Year.
I mean, there's no right way, but I kind of feel like 1 Mark II. And you start saying Mark II, and it kind of sounds like you're talking about Iron Man armor. I
well,
really
for
feel
me,
like
I think I'm talking about a Canon SLR. Like for me, it can be very
exactly. You're like a yeah. Sony Alpha, and it right. is exceptionally clear that Sony is. This is going to be tough. There's such a mirror finish on the phone that my camera, my poor Panasonic, probably won't be able to focus
was,
on this very well.
Or did I write? Is this the one with the quad, or this is the triple? No, this is the quad camera is the Xperia 1 Mark II, correct?
That's right. So we've got three main camera sensors for photography, and then there's also a time of flight, a depth tracking sensor.
There we go. Burke's zooming in Ooh, for those watching
that.
The video feed.
You can get the Zeiss label on that. Good job,
Burke. It looks like a long pill with four yeah. sensors plugged in there, plus two other sensors on top of the pill area. Are those,
yeah,
those
these
just
are,
flashes?
Yeah, this is a flash, and this is, I think, a light detection or something that kind of helps for metering.
No.
Sony phones are the most camera-like. So when I'm messing up my camera autofocus. Sorry.
Don't worry
about
it.
So when you're handling a Sony, it is just abundantly clear that they are working with the Alpha team at Sony very yeah. close. The Xperia team is no longer, I think, flying completely solo. And there have even been a few more conversations with Sony PR where they're bringing up things like PlayStation support and how you connect it to a right. DualShock, you know, a PlayStation controller.
Well, that's a big deal now, right? I mean, we've got Xbox integration on some Android phones. We've got Stadia, mm-hmm. which is supposed to become a thing somehow. But the idea is there in the ether that this is something.
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be pushed on us to kind of adopt.
And so for a certain phone company announcing today that they're bringing out a phone with flat and angular sides, I mean, I feel like Sony kind of beat them to the punch. And then they talked about how you're going to get 4K video, and I feel like Sony right. kind of beat them to the punch. And it all comes down to some of the absolute best photography interfaces
whoa,
I think you
whoa,
can find.
Whoa. Is that the camera so. UI, the stock camera UI that we're looking at right now?
So there are now three apps on a Sony. This is the Photo Ooh. Pro app, and, okay. and it really is. I mean, there's no shutter button on the screen. You hold it like a little rangefinder where the dedicated shutter button on the side
so
of
like
the phone is how you actually
yeah.
take the photo. And it's absolutely wonderful. There's never that opportunity, that moment where come on, I'm trying to get the camera to focus. There's never that moment where, you know, you're trying to do something on like a Samsung or an LG and you accidentally swipe. And it shifts you from like photos
oh,
to video,
that, yeah.
something really annoying. These Sonys now are just so hyper focused on getting that kind of photography done. It really is a joy to shoot with. And it really does feel like you are shooting on a Sony Alpha. It's immediately familiar if you've ever used one of their cameras. So I know a lot of people say like, oh, well, you know, it's not very good for auto modes, but their metering and their exposure adjustments are as straightforward and as simple as they can get. Like I'm in program mode here, just like you would have the dial on a regular camera. And if you want to go full green box auto mode, you can. If you've ever handled a camera, you know what this is going to do.
In terms of shooting, you know, again, we talk about the auto mode on the Pixel. It's very like 1-2. Point and shoot, you get the photo that you want as long as it's in focus. Mm-hmm. My experience with Sony phones of the past were that the camera hardware would be there, but the software just wasn't giving me what I wanted.
Yeah.
So are we getting actual results from having all of these lenses piped into this phone? Like, is this something that somebody would want to consider over a Pixel device?
So, I mean, I am immediately gonna sort of piggyback on that idea where a Sony phone is the least familiar. If you're comfortable with how an iPhone or a Pixel works, you're going to pick up a Sony and it's not going to feel like anything else that you've been used to. So the Xperia camera app is very much what you're describing. In the Xperia camera app, it's kind of you are removed from the decision-making process, full auto kind of situation. And, you know, you might even tap to focus and the phone will just say, no, that's not where you want to focus. You want to focus over here instead and kind of just take that out of your control. The video in the Xperia camera app is full. I mean, again, it's about as full auto as you can make that video. What's interesting is then when you go into Photo Pro or Cinema Pro, you have the exact opposite. You have the most complete collection of controls and of metering and of information getting fed back to you. So you kind of have bookends. You kind of have bookends where you don't really get to fight the Sony Xperia app, but then if you want to have the best sort of look over your composition, then you come to the Cinema Pro and the Photo Pro. And I haven't even shown you guys the Cinema Pro yet. It's a separate look here, where you get this cinema-wide crop. It's shooting HDR. You can shoot 60 frames per second. You can even control a rack focus. That's a busy interface.
That looks like a professional app.
Oh, yeah.
Like something that I would need time to learn.
It's totally built on, like, Sony Venice cameras. But, like, right here, what I'm showing is you can kind of preset a rack focus where you can move from one focus point to the other, and it'll automatically just sort of slide through.
Wow.
And you can set up a very cinematic pull, a focus pull, just like you would on a professional grade camera. And it's those little considerations. But I mean, it is. There's literally nothing like shooting on a Sony. But that also means you kind of need to treat it like a camera and give it just that extra window to become more familiar. The rest of this is wonderfully simple, sort of stock Android. It's the tallest, skinniest screen that you can get. It's a UHD resolution display it's got this kind of motion smoothing trick where black frame insertion tries to smooth out how you interact with the device. It's just really pretty, very unique, and it's an expensive phone. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, well, if you're out there shopping at Galaxy, switch it. Depending on retailer, it's $1,200 to $1,300 in the United States. So it's pricey, but it's also one of the most complete options. Wireless charging. It has a headphone jack for Ron. You can still throw in a memory card. There is no more pixel dense display on any phone on the market. Beastly powerful with that Snapdragon 865. And then Sony absolutely leads the way for power control. So they've got adaptive battery charging like a lot of other manufacturers have. This also has a feature called HS power control, heat suppression power control, where when you plug a cable in, it won't charge the battery. It'll only power the phone, so your battery doesn't run hot while you're using it, kind of like a laptop. And it's like, that's a feature that should be on every phone. And currently, I believe the only other device that has something similar is an Asus. So it really is a very unique multimedia and content creation kind of experience. And if you're really looking at something that, you know, you might want to make content, you might want to, like, shoot or record audio or produce a podcast all out of your phone, it's like Sony and LG are some of the best options for having that expanded list of controls. So what I'm hoping is that we'll also see some additional gaming features kind of coming to their game center. And that's more what the Xperia 5 is focusing on, is having that higher refresh rate display, being able to kind of more fluidly play certain apps and games. And then the UI gets a lot sleeker because of that higher refresh rate screen. But Sony's making some really strong arguments for an alternative device to what we've kind of accepted as sort of core stock Android.
Wow. Juan, I really appreciate you walking us through this enormous just phone. It's an enormous package, I should say, because it just has so much bundled in there. Now, I'm very curious, you know, before we sort of move on from Sony, kind of the big question that I've always had is, who is buying these phones and where are they? Can you answer that question for us?
Well, I mean, I just wanted to say real quick, you know, in terms of saying something's enormous, it's actually just a little bit skinnier than our cute little Pixel.
Oh, so it's very long, though.
It's very tall. So, I mean, you can see, my Pixel is about to slide out and crash on the floor. So you can see just how much taller it is. But my Hobbit thumb ability to reach the edges of the display, it does not feel anywhere near as chunky as like a Note or a V60 or any of the other bigger screen devices. Sony's are currently only unlocked in North America. So my go-to for shopping them is B&H. B&H is, I think, one of the most consistent carriers. They've been showing up more frequently on Amazon this year. Last year, they took a while to get to Amazon. But you shop them out. I don't know exactly what carrier support these might have. I'm on T-Mobile, and they seem to play just fine on T-Mobile. I think the big bummer for someone considering an alt phone like a Sony is, because they don't play as hard with the North American carrier market, the Xperia 1 and 5 Mark II currently don't support United States 5G. So these will be LTE only devices in North America. In other regions in the EU, they're going to be 5G ready. It's just our 5G rollout is kind of a mess. And it doesn't seem like Sony wants to play ball with that right now.
You can get them at Best. You can get them at Best Buy too. I've seen them for sale in stores at Best Buy. The question I have is that, like, so they're available. I just don't know why I don't see them on the subway more.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Sony is definitely in a situation not unlike some of the other. I'm going to switch back to my main camera here.
Yeah,
Sony's
please
in
do.
A situation where they're. I kind of feel like they're in a holding pattern. We look at companies like LG, where 2 years ago there was very little, almost no marketing. There was almost no, I mean, it was all just like YouTube and word of mouth. And this year for Sony felt like they were starting to pivot out of that. Not necessarily reaching out to like tech YouTubers, but there was a whole photography conversation happening online, and starting to see Sony kind of pick up and make smarter sort of pairings. You know, if you shoot on Sony Alpha cameras, I went to a photography demonstration that was hosted by Sony, and they actually had workshops talking about the first Xperia 1 and how people were using them for short films. And like, so I feel like it's very bottom up. It's very grassroots. It's, you know, they're rebuilding from those dark days where everyone was kind of decimated by the Snapdragon 810. You know, it tanked HTC, it tanked LG, it tanked those Sony Zs and XZ phones. Their recovery has been very slow and kind of meandering, but Sony's ability to execute better internal collaboration with these departments is delivering, I think, one of the most interesting phones of the year. This is one of my favorite devices of this year. But I would also, my recommendation for it is a little bit more reserved. You know, it's if you're a certain type of media or content creator, or you really like watching cinematic content on a juicy OLED. I'm not trying to make it sound like a $1,200 or $1,300 phone is like, oh yeah, you just go grab one of those at B&H and you're going to be great. But I really like having this as a solution where not a lot of attention is being played to that kind of pocket computer.
Wow. Juan, thank you so much for walking us through those two phones. This is a good time. It really is Techtober, as they say. Lots of new stuff to really like sink our teeth into and just think about where we're going to put our money going forward, right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, and it's good to have some options, you know, like, there's sort of a general coverage for Samsung or for Apple. And I don't feel like that general conversation always completely answers the question for someone who might have more niche or specific concerns for what they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, that's where a folding phone or a dual screen phone or some type of stylus enabled phone or a very heavy traditional camera centric device can kind of help someone hone in, you know, just sort of narrow down something that might be a better fit for them. I mean, they're absolutely niche players just because of the realities of this market, but we should have good options in those niche categories.
We will take a break now and thank our next sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by our friends over at LastPass. LastPass has made a commitment to protecting its users for the last 12 years. And now with 25 million users and 70,000 businesses, it's no surprise why they're the award-winning number one password manager. Living in a remote work environment has greatly impacted identity and access management for businesses, and adjusting to an online workforce hasn't been a logistical problem. It's also been a security issue. LastPass has been a saving grace to many companies. One in particular leveraged LastPass to enable the team to set up, utilize, and share strong passwords for their accounts and programs. Not only was this a crucial and progressive step towards improved data security, but it helped ease the burden of the shift to working from home full time. And trust me, I feel that burden. It has been a tough one. And luckily, LastPass makes it a little easier to jump that divide between going in the office every day and working from home. And if you haven't used them yet, now's the time for your business to get LastPass. They help you transition your remote workforce, so they'll help you out. Single sign-on manages employee access in a centralized view, so IT always has insight into who has access to what from where. Enterprise password management ensures oversight of shadow IT and enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. Multi-factor authentication requires additional factors to prove a user's identity, while the use of biometric and contextual factors makes the process smooth for employees. Their zero-knowledge security model protects everyone from their individual user to the biggest organization that uses LastPass. Your security is their top priority. And they allow employees to go passwordless and access to the tools they need to work. LastPass uses AES 256-bit encryption with PBKDF2 SHA-256 and salted hashes to ensure complete security in the cloud. Data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level, so the data in your vault is a secret from everyone, even LastPass. And that's something that we've learned from over the years, that you want to have your encryption happening on the device level. It's not up in the cloud. It's not shared. It's not accessible. It's just secure in your device, in your hand. And, you know, we use LastPass here at Twit. We love it. Longtime listeners of the show know that it was years ago that Jason turned me on to LastPass, and now I cannot live without it. I've got my family on it. Everyone's managing their passwords through their password manager. And just the other day, I had an old account that I needed to get into that I couldn't remember what the password was. Boom, it was in my vault in LastPass. I was able to access it on my phone, was able to jump over my laptop and use the Chrome extension. LastPass has just seamlessly fit into my life, and I can't imagine it without it. So I strongly encourage you to check it out as well. LastPass has won 8 awards so far this year. They are PC Mag's Editor Choice. They won the Fortress Cybersecurity Award, and they are Business Insider's Best Overall Password Manager, just to name a few. You don't have to take our word for it. LastPass speaks for itself. There's no better time to get LastPass. Ease the burden for yourself and your remote workforce with the cybersecurity protection you need. Go to LastPass.com/twit. That's LastPass.com/twit. And we thank them for keeping our passwords secure and helping us work easier in this remote environment. Thanks, LastPass.
You know, moving on from here, we do have one more little piece of hardware that we want to cover. So, Burke, yeah. I don't know if you've got the little B-roll to go through for the hardware.
That was good. I love it.
You hear the melody? And then, you know, he's supposed to have a little watch. So, Juan, you've got the TicWatch Pro 3, which this is kind of a silent winner among the Android wearables crowd. So I just kind of want to hear, you know, what your experience has been like with it. Oh, boy, that's really big, by the way. How big is that screen?
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger. I think it's like the casing is described as being like 46 by 47,
wow,
millimeters.
That's big.
But you also have to take into account that I have hobbit hands. So this is gonna look a little bit bigger on me than like if Jason were wearing a watch like this. I'm a big fan of Mobvoi. The Tick watches have been these sort of like quieter competitors in the Wear OS space. I mean, if we're talking Wear OS, it's very likely that Fossil Group is going to take the majority of the conversation there. In the smartwatch space, obviously, it's like Apple Watch and then Samsung Gears and then everyone else, you know, if we're not just looking at fitness trackers. But with the Tick Watch Pro 3, this is the Tick Watch Pro 3 GPS. So this is their Wi-Fi Bluetooth only Tick Watch. They're continuing this dual display, which, I mean, again, we're showing this on camera right now. And if you were a fan of wearables like the Pebble back in the day, this is the solution for improving battery life. I legit get around 3 days and two nights, not three full, you know, 3 full days and nights, but 3 days and two nights of actually using the watch, you know, replying to all my notifications that I can from the watch, fitness tracking from the watch, sleep tracking from the watch, and I'm not charging it as a smartwatch. So I don't know that there's any great power savings. This also has that new Snapdragon Wear 4100 chip from Qualcomm, but I feel like the bigger benefit comes from having a low power, always on display that you can always see. I'm trying to kind of get the right angle here.
I can see it. I mean, I like it on you. It looks good aesthetically. It looks like a really nice watch. I mean, I come from the Samsung Galaxy Active family, I guess you would say. And that's a very small watch in comparison. I like it that way. But I know that these watches are very popular. And I really have to know, like, what is it, Juan, that makes them so popular among the Android crowd?
Well, I feel like Mavoy does not get enough credit for being one of the biggest influencers of Wear OS. So when Google started moving... Again, we also know Wear OS is like this distant third place.
That's why I'm chuckling Watch OS. A little bit.
but you know, when we started doing this sort of four-directional swipe, that was actually a major UI feature on the original Tick Watch. They had a custom skin on their watches that enabled this type of directional navigation. And so now with the Wear 4100, everything's kind of just been spruced up a little bit. Everything's just a little sleeker, a little faster. And I'm hoping that this is going to be the platform that I can test the promised Wear OS update. Google put out that blog post saying, hey, we're really going to try and improve performance on Wear OS. Now we've got a more powerful device with better battery life. It's got a bigger battery. It's got a higher resolution screen. The OLED is a higher resolution OLED. And it's about $100 cheaper than a Wi-Fi only Apple Watch. So we've got blood oxygen if you want to test blood oxygen.
We don't
have an ECG. So if that was a feature you were interested in, we don't have ECG. But we've got all-day heart rate tracking, all-day fitness tracking. It will automatically kick over if it detects that you're starting a workout. All kinds of different profiles and presets for workouts. And Wear OS has started to improve their compatibility with things like blood sugar monitoring tech and diabetes tech and health tech. There's still a ways to go to catch up to Apple for that kind of stuff. But it's a positive sign. It's a positive sign for a platform that I think has been I'm trying to do this while looking at my camera screen and it's not working. It's a positive sign for something that I feel like Google hasn't been paying attention to like they should have, that now we're starting to get some improvements and it's starting to look a little bit better for Google having their own wearable in this space.
Quick question, and this kind of comes from the chat, but I think it will really resonate with anybody. So in terms of like upgrading, if you were a person maybe with a Gear S3 or maybe like an older Wear OS watch, would you consider this an upgrade? Who's kind of the target person that would want to check this out?
I really hope that people can hold on to watches for longer periods of time. I actually still have like some of those old Android Wear watches that just as simple notification machines, like they still work pretty well. Like my first generation ASUS ZenWatch is still kind of nice. Like
bless
it's still
you for still using
kinda
that one.
Works. So I'm really not the person to be saying like, hey, if you've got this one product or this one watch, jump on the upgrade. It's 2 years old now. Oh, how could you use something that's months and months old? What I kind of look at here is, based on your needs, something like a fitness tracker is going to cover a good chunk of the wearable community. If it's tracking your workouts, and it can kind of give you some passive notification alerts, something. I'm the type of person where I hate referencing my phone to check alerts and notifications. Yep. And most of those alerts and notifications, I should be able to clear without pulling my phone out of my pocket. And that's where this starts to make a lot more sense at that 300-ish kind of price tier. It's not an impulse buy. It's not a casual just for funsies accessory. You kind of want to look at whether or not that fits into a workflow or sort of a lifestyle that makes sense for you. But I feel like for the sort of negative sentiment or the feels that people have about Wear OS, having more power on your wrist, having a more powerful chip, and having better battery life at the same time makes this a really interesting competitor against something like a Samsung. I feel like Mavoy is in a unique position to offer up probably the premium tech experience for Wear OS. And now it's up to Google to kind of get developers making more applets and to deliver some of these promised operating system updates.
I like the optimism that you have that might happen, because
I'm not holding my breath, because then the watch will nag me to breathe. Nice. It'll see my blood oxygen. But no, it's if Google is going to put out blog posts saying, hey, we're going to do this. OK, I'm very anxious. I really want to see them improve their wearable strategy, because I kind of feel like we're missing that last linchpin of ecosystem. I've got these Pixel Buds that have great Google Assistant integration. These are things that I wear. So why not include Wear OS into an ecosystem of products? One of the last times I came on the show, I was talking about Focals by North, and Google bought Focals by North. So why doesn't Wear OS mean operating system for something that I wear on my face, something that I wear on my shoes, something that I wear in my ears? So even if it's just a baby step, like we're going to improve the smartwatch operating system, that's great. But I really want to see Google start tying these pieces together, because they might be one of the only companies with all of those pieces now. I just want to see them execute on something a bit more holistically.
It's a fair point. Yeah, I'm just not optimistic it'll happen. So,
it's a cool watch. Update is already out for one watch. I just don't know what the longer support is going to be. So if you've got something like an Aware 2100, I'm not sure what watches and manufacturers are going to be getting support back that far. I would imagine that the Fossil Group is probably going to keep up with the Aware 3100 watches. But this is brand new. Like, this is the new Tick watch. So if we don't get at least the Android 11 update for this, then I kind of feel like torches and pitchforks are totally warranted. You know, it's like I want to see Google do this right, because, you know, wearable tech is something that we're going to be doing way more of. So why not have some good solutions and some good competition in that space? They just seem to slow play it, and they've not been super competitive over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, wearables. It is a strange vertical within the hardware space. So, well, cool. That was awesome. Thanks for sharing, Juan. And with that, let's dive into some apps.
Coming this winter, the All About Android Vaporwave album. JK. So as part of the new shift over to Google TV, it's time for us to now say goodbye to Google Play Movies and TV, the app. So earlier this year, we helped you get away, say goodbye to Google Play Music, maybe kind of. Now we have to say goodbye to Google Play Movies and TV, but it's being completely rebranded as Google TV. Some of you may have noticed the icon already on your home screen. I did the other day, and I just like turned on the LG Velvet, and it was on there. This is not my daily driver, but it was there waiting for me. Now, a couple of things just to sort of keep in mind about this new app is that the interface you see on it is going to be very familiar to the Google TV interface that's coming through. So you have For You recommendations put front and center. Whatever you've got going on HBO Max, if you're a subscriber, if Google knows you've watched Disney Plus, it will suggest things through that app. If, you know, maybe you've got a Hulu account you've logged into before, you'll have suggestions for that on the screen. There will also be top picks based on genres that you've partaken in before. So right now, some of my top picks include Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Yes, that's on par. Grey's Anatomy. Definitely something I maybe would have been into like 13 years ago, maybe a little 13 years too late, but you know, Chernobyl. Absolutely. I would love to watch Chernobyl, but I'm not going to
do that.
It
was
I don't know if I can handle that kind of content right now.
It was really good. Really good.
I also find it very interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I went into the HBO app and I was like faving some movies that I want to show Mona. So Anastasia, the animated movie, is here on my suggestions list, which I think is kind of nice. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Interesting.
Nice.
Interesting. You know, it's basically trying to emulate what you have going on with Google TV. Again, I talked about a lot how the new interface is very centered on giving suggestions of content to watch rather than just here are the apps that you've had installed on your Google TV. The app is a very similar idea. Now, I'm going to try something. So this suggested to me to pop into Anastasia. So I'm just going to tap on it and see what it does. So what it does is it takes you to the page. You have the Rotten Tomatoes listing there. Very standard kind of, this is, you know, here are the ratings. Now you can choose where to watch it. Do you want to add it to your watch list? I'm going to add it to my watch list. Why the heck not? Now I can choose whether I want to watch it at HBO or whether I want to watch it here on Google TV and rent it the way that I would have previously on Play Movies and TV. So you'll still be able to rent in HD or SD based on what you want to watch, or the app will point you to the service where you can watch this if you already pay for it. A little annoying is the fact that there are suggestions for things like Disney Plus, which I'm not paying for right now. So I can go in and it'll tell me I can watch the right stuff at Disney Plus and how many episodes are available, as well as how much I could pay monthly to get access to that. But there is instead a button to install Disney Plus. So what it'll do is I'll tap that, and then right within the app, it'll allow me to install it. So it's kind of a nice little user-friendly way to get content without having to dig into the Play Store separately from the Google TV app. Again, some of the genres that I was talking about Google TV offering to me last week when I was doing the Chromecast review, you know, we've got all my reality TV is there, romance shows. Again, that seems to be a thing that keeps getting peddled to me. Science fiction, superhero movies, watch it again. I am very curious to see if I am going to be able to find new content, because one thing I really like doing was logging into Play Movies and TV at the end of the week, especially during pandemic times. We've all been at home and seeing what I can rent. It brings me back to the days of yore where you'd walk inside of a Blockbuster and you'd either go to the left where all the new releases were, or you'd go to the right where all the, you know, archive stuff where it was to kind of see if you wanted to get something from there. So I kind of like that I can get that experience in an app. And I'm glad that Google's not totally going away with that. It's interesting
because you could get this in an app, and it was in apps like Just Watch and other apps that aggregated what was playing on the various streaming services. Like, I think it's really telling or interesting that Google is abandoning pushing their TV and movie store and rather embracing all these other streaming services. Like, it's almost like this is definitely user friendly, but it's also just like, yeah, but we're not going to push you to use us, which I feel
is telling. No, that's not true. I mean, I still have a tab for my library,
but it's not primary.
Sure. Movies.
Yeah.
But I think this is interesting is, do you think that this is Google's way of kind of end running around some of the issues that the Apple App Store has had, but putting their platform on our platform?
Yeah.
You can watch Disney Plus and you can watch Hulu and you can use HBO Max. But this is Android and Google and trying to kind of position it there first without like really stepping on the toes of all of the different content distribution partners that they might be working with.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a really good point, Juan. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to stop renting movies through Google, though. I mean, that's still a preferred
method.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I definitely feel like this move towards Google TV is very much just a rebranding to be in a position where it can be against Apple TV, you know, maybe really go up against the other set-top boxes that are available, and just think of it more as a platform.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Ron.
I was gonna say, this is clearly to get the Chromecast, the new Chromecast, up over the hump of what it previously has been, and embrace all the different ways you can watch video, not just on their own platform. So I like it. I think I'm using the app. It's on my home screen now.
I was just going to say real quick, because I always just thought it was interesting how the proto version of this, where all of those weird like licensing partnerships with like Movies Anywhere, you get like a digital code from buying a Blu-ray and it would add it to your catalog here and then it would show up in your Play Store. But that to me always seemed like I wonder how they did that, because then, you know, there's no reason for me to use Movies Anywhere. It's just going to show up in my Google Play catalog.
I love Movies Anywhere because what it did was it took all the different places where you may have bought a movie or gotten a movie for free. Honestly, my Movies Anywhere is filled with all like the here's a free movie on us, whatever. Yep. And when I've gotten digital codes from Blu-rays and things like that, it's a great place to enter it in. But the thing about Movies Anywhere is it's a rare case of the studios and the platforms all working together and plugging in to make, you know, to share data and to make it easier on the consumer, which is like, we never see that happen, right? So that's why I love to promote Movies Anywhere, because I feel like it's a customer forward approach as opposed to the platforms. So.
Oh, for sure. But doesn't this feel so interesting, though, that now they're not hiding where the movie's coming from, like if it's Netflix or if it's Disney Plus, but they're the front end. This is Google. And you can watch Disney Plus on Google. And I just think it's kind of an interesting twist that Google is now positioning themselves ahead. Whereas like the whole Movies Anywhere thing was just sort of seamless and it just kind of worked behind the scenes and you didn't have to like babysit it. You weren't really aware of where you got the movie from. It was just in your catalog. I just think it's an interesting turn seeing Google kind of take ownership of a platform as opposed to trying to be a one-stop shop.
Definitely is interesting.
Just sort of before we close out this conversation, I'm curious with you what you guys think about with this Play branding, because I see it's really being shuffled out for other things. Play Music, obviously, we talked about YouTube Music, Play Movies and TV. That's going the way of Google TV. So what's going to happen to our Play Store? Our App Store?
So what's left is Play Books and Play Games. Right? Those are the holdouts now. And then
it's felt like kind of the game center approach. It's just kind of where everything is aggregated, things you've been playing, that sort of thing. It's not really a platform to consider.
I don't know about publishing, but I'll be very surprised if over the next year what Play Games represents isn't rolled into something like Stadia. The one that I'm not sure is what do you do with periodicals and with ebooks, where I have to believe like Amazon is the dominant force in that. So does Google do something similar where they work with Amazon for your Kindle library to be also a front end on a Google service with eBooks, much like Google TV is doing. Because they don't have, I mean, Chromecast is a vested interest in having a video streaming solution in place. eBooks, not as precious, no. I feel, for what Agreed. Google's trying to do. So I kind of feel like, you know, that's probably going to be the one that's going to hold out the longest just while Google figures out what to do with it.
It better, because yeah. I have a giant library on there, both of things I've uploaded to my account and things I've purchased.
Oh,
and I would
right,
you know.
Well, they're very good about letting you download your library and figure out a way to transfer it and all that stuff. So I'm sure when they decide, they'll figure it out. But anyway, moving on. Real quick note, our favorite podcast player app here at All About Android is Pocket Casts, and they just rolled out an interesting bit of new functionality that I thought was really interesting that I've never – you wonder why hasn't anyone done this yet. But with the new version of Pocket Casts, you can now sort your podcast that you listen to by length as it relates to your commute time. So if you have a 30-minute commute, you can say sort all my podcasts by episodes that are 30 minutes or less.
That is so cool.
Isn't that so cool? Yeah, very smart, and glad to see the gang over at Pocket Cast doing smart things for podcasts. Unfortunately, this show would not appear in a 30-minute or less commute, but all of you who are driving 2 hours, we salute you. So,
and bless you. Bless you. Very quickly, before we go to our next ad, just a quick little update on the recorder app for Pixel phones. It now lets you edit by transcription. So this is nice and helpful. If you need to edit a transcription, you no longer have to go through the waveform and just kind of like slide around and be like, where's that place that I want to edit it? No, instead, all you have to do is you go in and you highlight the portion of the transcription that you need to kind of, you know, clip out, and the app will do it for you. So something very fun to just kind of like look forward to. This update is rolling out right now. So if you don't have it quite yet on your Pixel, don't fret. You can sideload it though. XDA Developers, I believe, has a APK rolling around, and I'm sure APK Mirror does as well. So if that's something that you want to push through, go and have yourself some transcribing fun. I know I will. Woo. I need all the help I can get. I can't afford an intern.
All right. Fun times. Now let's thank our last sponsor of the evening. We want to thank ZipRecruiter for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, there's a lot to think about these days as an employer, and hiring can be challenging, especially when you have to think about enforcing social distancing and supplying masks and making sure your work environment is safe and all that stuff. There's a lot to do. Monica Starks could relate. She needed to hire for a pivotal role at her construction company, GS Group, but was having a tough time finding the right person with so many candidates out there. So she switched to ZipRecruiter because they make hiring easy. ZipRecruiter's technology identifies people with the right experience for your job and actively invites them to apply, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. And that's how Monica found Lamont Jenkins. She said that ZipRecruiter sent Lamont's profile to her around 5 minutes after she posted her job because he was a great match for the role. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's insane, everyone. If you've ever been hiring for somebody, those kind of results are just nuts. It's fantastic. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter makes the entire hiring process efficient and effective, with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. See for yourself. Try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/Android. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter.com/Android. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. You're awesome. Very smart ways to hire. Cool. So, Flo, we got some emails from the audience, from the community.
Email. So we've got this. That was my Homestar Runner impression, by the way. 18 years
later. Nice.
So our first email comes from Peter Keefe, and I think this is a very important and timely question to come through. So Peter writes in, I'm trying to decide between the new Chromecast of Google TV and the NVIDIA Shield. In addition to streaming, I'd like to be able to host my local movie collection. Do you know if it's possible to add external storage to the new Chromecast and make it a Plex server? Now, I got to say, Peter, I don't know specifically about making it specifically a Plex server. I do know that there is that dongle that lets you turn it into actually the Ethernet dongle is separate from what I'm referring to. You could get a separate USB-C dongle and try and add on storage that way. But I will say I think you're better off just having a separate Plex server in the house and then just downloading the app on the Google TV dongle. I keep saying dongle. And it's just
it's a weird word. It's okay. As someone who has a desktop on my network with a very large multi-terabyte hard drive with a Plex server running on it, and then an NVIDIA Shield Pro, which I could run a server on, but I'm using the Plex app to pull from that server. You have no problem. I have no problem whatsoever ever with streaming that content from the desktop to the Plex, to the Shield. And I can't imagine you have a problem with Chromecast either. That's good advice, Flo. Juan, do you concur? Or?
Exactly the same. Yeah. I finally rolled over to a little QNAP NAS, just a box of hard drives that's connected to my router. And it's really nice not needing to worry about what solution works with what smart TV, with what platform, or what kind of storage might be compatible, or should I use a flash drive? And I just put stuff on a giant stack of hard drives, and it goes to everywhere on our network, and it seems to work just fine. So yeah, as much as someone might be able to, or even just look at your router and see if you can plug a hard drive directly into your router and run it that way, I think it's probably the better solution. And then it won't matter. It won't matter if you have Chromecast or Shield or anything else. You can kind of work globally.
There are a couple things to consider, though, if you are choosing between the two. Google TV, slightly better, or I should say the NVIDIA has a slight, NVIDIA Shield has a slightly better functional remote, has a micro SD card slot, so you can expand storage that way. It also has 4K AI upscaling, which has a lot of positive reviews across the board. But you will have to contend with that old Android TV UI for now, because we're not sure when exactly it's going to be updated in 2021. So you're sort of waiting at Google's hands here until they push through that update. And I got to tell you, going to the Xiaomi Mi Box after spending like a week or two with the Google TV in the other room, I don't like it. I really like the new Google TV. Seriously, the Android TV is just not cutting it for me. I do like my suggestions being up in front. So some things to consider. Also, $150 asking price more than the $50 Chromecast Google TV. So major price differentiation. Those are the very big things to consider.
Those added features come at a cost, but it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyway, I love my NVIDIA Shield. I think it's great. I swear by it. And I'll be patient for the Android TV update. I'm sure they'll do it eventually.
It's a power user set-top box, but I think the biggest thing it has against it right now is just that Android TV software update is unknown for now.
Yeah. Good point. All right. And now it is time for, I hope Burke is ready, the email of the week. There it is. And the email of the week designation goes to one Mr. Richard Shepard, who wrote in about an issue with Android 11 that we actually got a bunch of emails from you in the community about in the last week. So this is a hot topic, and I wanted to hear what Juan and Flo, what you think, if you've heard about this at all. So Richard says, let me start by saying I really enjoy the show and have been a regular watcher for many years. Thank you, Richard. He says, I have a Pixel 4a, my first Pixel, and I've loved it until I upgraded to Android 11. I use my phone as my primary audio source, and since the OS update, audio cuts out intermittently, making it impossible to use. I've worked with Google Tech Support, sent them a bug report, but there's now acknowledgement of the issue. It appears to be widespread across many devices, but Google has not acknowledged this very serious bug. This issue is more widespread than Bluetooth or car connectivity. I've personally had the problem issuing just the phone speakers to eliminate the Bluetooth piece. Can you take a look at the bugs on Android 11? They're significant and worthy of a story on your fine show. Mm-hmm. And I dug into this a little more, and it appears that when connecting to Bluetooth and to cars or Bluetooth speakers, there is a problem with the audio that cuts out for seconds or minutes. Mm-hmm. And at first people thought it was related to notifications, getting a message coming in or something like that, and it going with that. But that has been eliminated, and people don't know what's wrong. And can you imagine having minutes of your podcast or music being cut out
it
and not knowing
to me.
What that's
yeah.
happening? It did?
It happened to me. Actually, this problem happened to me when I went camping. We rented a car. It had Android Auto. And my podcast, which was locally stored, was skipping the entire time. It was super annoying. And I was listening to one of those like recap podcasts, so it was missing parts of like the movie that we were recapping. And it's a 4-hour drive, you know, so we were all listening right. to it. It was very annoying. I thought it was just a Bluetooth connection issue, that maybe the car stereo just kept connecting and disconnecting, and that's why it was doing that. But and it's interesting because I'm on a OnePlus on Android 10.
I was experiencing this on a OnePlus 8 using one of the developer betas for Android 11. And so I was chalking it up to that. I'm on beta software. This is probably what the situation is. But yeah, on my Pixel 4a too, I would say Bluetooth connections are now very intermittently less stable. And I haven't been able to pin down exactly what. So I've got like a ridiculous number of different like Bluetooth headsets and earbuds and things. And some seem to perform a little bit better than others. And so what I should probably do at some point is also just track. Is this an older headset with Bluetooth 4.2? Is there some problem with Bluetooth LE? Is this Bluetooth 5? And try and see if there's any correlation. The only reason I'm not is because I figure by the time I go through all of those headsets, Google will probably push out an update that fixes it. I'm really hoping. But unfortunately, I mean, and like, Ron, I don't know if you've been able to find anything on this. I was reading up on this independent of actually coming on the show. Right now, we're still in diagnosis mode.
Yep.
Like there doesn't seem to be any good data on how to fix it.
It's a major step in that not only is it if you look at the life cycle of these problems, it's kind of like the steps of recovery or whatever it is. Like first there's denial, right?
Right.
And then there's acknowledgement and actually admitting that there's an issue.
My phone never lags. My phone never stutters.
Exactly. And then it's admitting that there's a problem, and then you get into diagnosis, and then hopefully we get the fix. So the fact that Google has now acknowledged that this exists and is listed, you know, in product forums and things like that, and discussions. If you go dig in it, you'll find people talking about it. You got to hope that a future update will address this, because that, I mean, and I agree with Richard. I mean, it is downplayed, but that is a major impact. Like the number of people using Bluetooth speakers and car connectivity and Bluetooth headphones and things like that. And like these devices are audio listening devices. I go running, I listen to podcasts, we listen to music. We, you know, like they've been positioned that way. They just have to work. It shouldn't be, you know, a post release fix. Like they should have caught that in the period before it came out. So really interesting.
And it definitely speaks to just how crazy complicated. I mean, we take it for granted that, you know, I open the case on my Pixel Buds and they automatically pair with a phone that's within the vicinity of my Pixel Buds. We have made these things so complicated. We're still trying to hold on to legacy connections. We're still trying to improve security where Bluetooth is not the best security platform for having sensitive information travel off of your device into another accessory. We're dealing with different formats of wireless connectivity from Bluetooth 4 to Bluetooth 5 and the bullet points, you know, in between. I'm going to be the snarky git, at least on a Pixel 4a, you have a fallback where you can plug in cables. You absolutely need to keep a stable audio connection, but it is a concern for Android, you know, moving forward, because so many premium phones now lack that ability to easily just, you know, switch over to a competing solution like a 3.5 millimeter jack. So on the one hand, I want to be somewhat sympathetic. Like every platform, every phone, no computer is ever complete. You know, no software is ever finished. Everything is a fluid moving target of updates and bug fixes. And you fix one bug and then it creates another bug somewhere else. Maybe this is a security issue with the way that Android 11 is handling background processes. You know, there could be something deep in that Android code that has nothing to do with Bluetooth or audio, but is looking at communication on the phone and saying, well, this is a non-essential communication. And for security reasons, we're going to interrupt what's going on. It's getting incredibly difficult to try and like hone in on what might actually be causing a problem like this. And I think it's a crazy job. It is definitely a thankless job. Like, I can't imagine what software engineers are going through right now to try and make something consistently functional on a pocket supercomputer these days.
Yeah. It's like a crazy detailed whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole. So, yeah. Exactly.
Pocket supercomputers.
Well, thank you, Richard, for bringing up this issue. And that gives you the email of the week. So, Flo, you're saying pocket supercomputers?
Pocket supercomputers is a great way for us to end out the show, because that's what we were talking about today. All these pocket supercomputers, which thankfully our guest Juan Bagnell has really helped us cover today. Thank you, Juan, for being here today and for just like bringing all the hardware and having all these great takes. You're pretty great. Thanks for being here.
You guys are pretty great too. Anytime you guys want to have me back and, you know, tout the superiority of cabled audio solutions, I'll be your guy. So
listen, you're consistent. Time. So, people know what they're getting.
if you'll pardon the plug, Android Central just put together an incredible collaboration video of just like all kinds of different YouTubers talking about their headphones. I was very appreciative where they even let me join that conversation, knowing that I was going to whine about headphone cables and hearing loss and stuff. So that was, and anytime, you know, you guys want to have that kind of a chat, you know, I'm absolutely down to jump in and soapbox about that. So it's good.
And that's why that's why we love you, Juan. So
exactly. I was going to ask, Juan, where's the best place for people to find you if they want to learn more about you after this show?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Burke's pulling it up right now on the stream. It's if you go to somegadgetguy.com, that's sort of the main hub for where I kind of put everything that I'm working on. I around the social medias, you can find me as Some Gadget Guy. I'm producing with Newegg. I might be picking up a couple new editorial beats soon. Trying to talk about better competition, trying to talk about tech and politics, and then also still revisiting conversations about hearing health and hearing loss, the major sort of talking points I've had for 2020, and hopefully trying to encourage more techies to join those conversations, because I feel like we should be leading these conversations, not just always reacting to what's going on around us.
100%. Thank you, Juan, again for being here.
Hey.
Ron. Thank you for helping me today.
Thank you, Flo, for helping me. It's always a pleasure. Flo, where can people find you and know what you're doing?
Where can people find me? You can find me at florenceion.com. That's my website. In fact, today I posted about my keyboard and how it made me cry. So if anybody would like to go see this keyboard that made me cry, please. florenceion.com is where you can find that information. Enjoy. What about you, Ron?
You can go follow me over on Twitter and Instagram at RonXO, and you can check out scorbit.io, which is the website for my startup where we are connecting pinball machines to the internet, selling a fun piece of hardware called the Scorbitron. We have a Android app you can download in the Google Play Store called Scorbit, where you can keep track of your pinball scores. If you're into pinball, check it out and get on board. It's the future. So, yay.
Yay! I also want to give a big thanks to Burke. Burke, thanks for just, you know, putting up with everything we're throwing your way today. Big thanks to Anthony, who will be editing this show afterwards. And I guess it's time now to officially say our goodbyes and officially close out the show. Hey, don't forget that the end of the year is coming and we really need your help with the end of the year best of episodes. If you can recall any time within the last, I don't know, what are we now at, like 43 weeks or something of the year, where you laughed, where you cried, where you gasped, or maybe you were just stumped, you can submit your episode at twit.tv/bestof. So please help us out there. It's a fun thing that we love to do every year at the end of the year. Hey, you can also follow Twit on the social medias at Twit on Twitter, twit.tv on Instagram, and everywhere else that you get your social media goodness. Hey, don't forget also to wear a mask. It saves lives. And you can get some pretty cool ones if you like, including from our store at twit.tv/store. Show pride for your favorite podcast on your mouth as you are saving the lives of others. That's it for us this week. If you would like to leave us a voicemail or become somebody that contributes to our email of the week, you can do that at... You can leave a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. That's three A's. Or you can email us at AAA@twit.tv. That's three A's again. You can also subscribe to us at twit.tv/AAA. Again, with the three A's. That's right. We are three A's for All About Android. That's it for me. And that's it from us. And we're going to be back next week with Jason leading the helm. So until then, everybody, be safe. Have fun and bye for now.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm Jason Howell, host of Hands on Android, where each week I take a look at the Android operating system and really dive deep into what it can do for you and how it can improve your quality of life, whether it be tips and tricks on how to use it better, whether it can be little known secrets that open up a world of possibilities. So many topics to dive into, including your emails. Subscribe by going to twit.tv/HOA. We'll see you there.